Okay, time again for Truth About Markets, Max and Stacy, the show that started the whole ball rolling right here on Residence 104.4 every Saturday night now for, gosh, years. And we must have done 150 of these shows, you know? We started doing these shows. We started talking about the fraud on the financial markets and in the city of London, and we named names, you know, remember we've done Bradford and Bingley, Northern Rock, remember those? Said that they were committing acts of egregious accounting irregularities and that were going to crash and burn, and the bankers and the hedge fund managers in London were colluding. They were going to take down the global economy. Of course, that all happened. Then I went on other TV shows, you know, like France 24 and Al Jazeera, Press TV. Said the same thing I say on this show. That you heard it here first. On this show. You heard it here first. Of course, none of you have any money, so it didn't really make any difference. But at least you had bragging rights down at the pub. Yeah, I knew all about it 5 years ago from Max Kaiser. Yeah, sure, you know, I know all about it. Which is all we have in this new global economy of serfs and lords and... Well, you're all used to it here in Britain anyway. It's gone back to the Middle Ages, you know. Basically just Lord Snooty Puss and Sir this guy and Lord that guy and, you know. Subsistence thinking. This is the trend for the new decade. Subsistence thinking. Basically the way it works, Stacy. And of course, Stacy's here with me and you'll hear from in a moment. Subsistence thinking is basically, it's like subsistence farming. You know, tenant farmers, they borrowed money to till the land and then they paid back their crops to pay back the loan, but they never paid enough back to get out of debt. And so they live in perpetual debt. Basically, subsistence thinking is the same kind of idea, whether it's health care in the U.S. Or the top-up fees, you know, the amount of money you need to go to school here in the U.K. The government has abdicated its role as a representational entity for the people. They've outsourced it to private enterprise, corporations, mercenaries. And they offer the same thing, whether it's rail system or transportation or hospitals or education. But they charge 10 or 20 times more than what you would... pay in real expenses, not to be confused with the nominal expenses, the real expenses. You pay 10 or 20 times more, and of course, there's no jobs because of the global wage conflation, and you're competing with Chinese people and Indian people paying, you know, getting 38p an hour. So you have to go into debt, and there's no manufacturing jobs. Of course, they're all gone. There's no mining jobs. They're all gone. The North Sea oil is gone. There's no metal benders, as they're called, you know, manufacturers, really. So the only thing left for people to do is to surf the web, go on sites like Google or Facebook or Skype or these Web 2.0 social networking sites, click around, view ads, click on ads, buy some virtual strawberries on Farmville over at Facebook. Spend hours and hours growing virtual, you know, virtual tenant farming, virtual thinking, because they're not actual real strawberries, but you are same thing as a tenant farmer, but with virtual produce. So you're a virtual tenant farmer, or what I like to think of as basically a thought debt indebtedness. I forgot what I call this to begin with, but anyway, what did I call this?
Subsistence
thinking. You have to think, you have to interact for your daily crust. So you go on the line for 5 or 6 hours, you send like 30 blog entries, you send 1 million emails, you do 100 texts, you're on Skype, you're raising your virtual strawberries, you spend 8 or 10 hours doing this. Over that period of the day, you might view $6 or $7 worth of ads. And at the end of the day, you know, vis-a-vis new virtual currency exchanges like the Linden dollar at Second Life, appropriately called Second Life. You know, these virtual currencies are exchangeable into pounds, and you put in your swipe card or your debit card or your credit card, and you download the $6 minus their commission, their fee of $3 or $4, so you end up with $2. And you can use that $2 and go buy yourself, a Marmite sandwich maybe, in some beat out, crushed, burnt out, seedy, East End London dive, and maybe a pint of rot gut Budweiser, and you're laughing, you're living large. You flip on the BBC, watch Jeremy Paxman. Speaking of Jeremy Paxman, Stacy, I'll get into it in a second here, but why don't you say hello to the people?
Hello, people.
That's very nice of you to say that. Hey, by the way, I got an email from the head honcho over there at that show on Resonance 104.4 that I listen to now religiously, The Naked Short Club. The Naked Short Club's on every week now. I think it's on Monday nights. It's it takes this show to a new level. And if you're taking whatever, however many drugs you were taking before you listen to this show, double or triple your dosage for this Naked Short Club. I listen to it nude. I take the whole naked thing, literally. And I find that it enhances my listening experience.
That's right. We're on Mondays as well. Don't keep on pulling
you
the
think that
mic.
It distracts people?
Well, that will have to be cut, but
Time cutting. That's all right.
We just made a big knock on the microphone. Sorry about that. But no, we're on Monday. We're on Mondays as well. A repeat of this show.
Yeah, repeats are great, man. But do you get high listening to the repeat? It's like you could save on your drugs. Instead of buying new drugs for Monday, just listen to this show and your subconscious mind will replay all the hallucinations you had listening to the show on Saturday. So it cuts down on your drug expenses. We're saving you money. First, we make you money by getting you to, dump your worthless British pounds and buy gold bullion, as we did. And that was up 40% last year. Now we're saving you money by doubling the potency of your drugs by listening to this show on Monday and getting the same high you got on Saturday. I mean, what more do you want on this? This is value for money. Value.
That's what I'm saying is Mondays might be a giant trip if you've got, first of all, us, and I think something like 11 a.m., and then you've got the Naked Short Club later in the day.
Yeah, it reminds me of those polar bear swimming winter swimmers. Naked Short Club. What, you seem all jittery over there. You okay?
No, I'm sitting here. I just had a scratch in my eye. That's because a piece of hair went in it. But
what's that little thing wiggling over there? Is that the guy you distracted?
That's the show recording.
Those is it are, okay? It's not my heart. That's not an EKG machine. If it is, I'm dead. I died. How about that? If I scream, is that
appropriate?
Is that bad though? Do the people?
Those are sound waves.
But they're not too big, are they? Doesn't the microphone condense it or something? What do they call it? They condense it?
Yeah. So it condenses.
I'm trying to talk in a way that people can understand because last year everybody would say, that Max, he just mumbles a lot. We can't understand a frickin' word he says.
That's right, because you remember you
now
used to
what?
Do this.
Now what are they complaining about?
We'll talk about that on the Truth About
frickin'
Comments.
Frickin' Brantford pickle sandwiches?
Well, actually, listen.
No, the Braxton? Brixton
Branston.
Pickle. Branston.
Branston.
How come the Brixton doesn't have a pickle? You got a Branston pickle, why doesn't Brixton have a pickle? Brixton should have their own pickle. They can say, I got a Brixton pickle sandwich. Why does Branston have a pickle and not Brixton? People would know what Brixton is all about. I don't care. What was it? The Clash started there, right? That band, The Clash, remember them? Remember that?
Jimmy Cliff or whatever. Jimmy
Electric Avenue?
Yeah, he started there. But The Clash, I think. Yeah, they were there at the Brixton Riots or something, weren't they?
Yeah, the Brixton Riots. But they didn't, they should have named the pickle after the Brixton place, and then they would have had a much better time of it the whole last century.
That's what they could, that's the marketing campaign. So the Brixton Pickle.
Come to
riot.
Brixton, we don't have a pickle.
Brixton Pickle, have a riot.
Speaking of pickles, our Russian landlord gave us a jar of Russian pickles for New Year's, and believe it or not, there really is such a thing as a Russian pickle. They have a little bit of a sugar coating or something, isn't it?
What do they call it? Something like Metamucil or... It sounds like Metamucil. Samusul or something like that.
Barabasful Halsum.
They're really good.
Hey, we're going to Moscow in a few weeks, by the way.
That's right. We're going...
If anybody hears the show in Moscow and they want to meet up with us, sent us an email, and hopefully it won't be, you know, one of those situations where I get some plutonium 210 slipped into my sushi, because that would be a nasty bit of business for your correspondent here, Max Kaiser, the ratings riser. Wherever I go, ratings go higher.
Well,
the,
it would
the number one rated video YouTube on France 24, number one. No video has ever gotten more views on YouTube than my video where I say that Goldman Sachs sucks on France 24. Nobody even comes close, okay? Whose videos dominate Press TV's channel page,
if we went to Moscow,
Kaiser.
If we went to Moscow, or Moscow, and you were polonium 210, it would bring a lot of free publicity to Resonance. I'm sure they would, you know, headlines
would
might
read. Would they bury their head in the sand like they did during that whole Yoko Ono thing?
Now, they might, the headlines might read, you know, Resonance FM presenter Max Kaiser, polonium 210 in Moscow.
Yeah, that would be cool, wouldn't it? Resonance FM, is there an AM in Britain? Or am I just saying that completely, you know, for no reason all these years?
Well, there
did they have AM?
Well, I'm not sure if it's a big market, but they have to have AM.
They exist, though, right? There
Isn't
is an AM
just,
band.
Yeah, yeah, they have to. It's just a radio band. Wave.
Well, I suppose maybe they don't call it AM though. You know, things have a different name in Britain. You know, they don't call a truck, they call it a lorry, don't they? They don't call an elevator, they call it a lift. They don't call an apartment, they call it a flat. So maybe they call AM something different. You know, they don't call IQ QI. What's that show QI about? Why don't they just call it IQ? I don't get it. Did they looked in the mirror and saw his reflection? So there's 9 more years of Stephen Fry?
I don't know.
Speaking of famous Britain people, how about this guy from The Office? He's a big star in America now.
Ricky Gervais, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and they've turned his podcast, his old podcast, into a TV show. Animated TV show.
Hey, that's amazing.
Why don't they turn all of our Resonance 104.4 FM, Truth About Markets, here, right here in London?
Well, let me ask you this. You know, what? Ricky Gervais, okay, he did The Office, him and Stephen Merchant. And the reason I mentioned Stephen Merchant is because 3 years ago, I was in a pub quiz on Christmas Eve, and I saw Stephen Merchant in the table next to me, and I was very impressed that I was sitting in the same pub as him. He is, of course, as co-creator of The Office, a legend. So,
I thought you were going to say about how tall he was.
Yeah, he's tall. He's a tall guy.
He is tall.
I said he's a tall guy. And you said, no, he is a tall guy.
No, I said was. And then I corrected myself and said is.
Oh, you're correcting yourself. It's a self-correction. Well, we're talking about this guy. What's his name again?
Ricky Gervais.
Ricky Gervais. Now, the thing is, Stacey Herbert, is that Ricky Gervais, he went over to the United States of America and he established himself in his own right as an American TV and film star. I just saw a couple, you know, he's a good actor. I got to give him this. He's a good actor. I've seen two films he was in. One of them, he's a dentist. The latest one, he's a dentist. He's a lonely dentist. And, you know, it's a funny film. And he actually delivers a performance rich with pathos and humor. And the script, of course, is funny. And he's a funny guy. Now, let's contrast this with what I think is going to happen to Jonathan Ross.
Oh, when he tries to go there.
Jonathan Ross is leaving the BBC.
Mm-hmm.
Because they huge cutbacks because of the financial crisis that we told you about 4 years ago. While everyone else was lying to you, and now that they say that nobody saw it coming and they are compounding their lies with additional lies, you know that we told you it was coming, why it was coming, what was going to happen, and what's happening, what's going to happen. During that whole period of time, the BBC allowed itself to get swept up in the mania, and before you know it, people like Jonathan Ross were making many millions of pounds per year. Really, you know, it's a function of the whole mania that goes the same thing with Royal Bank of Scotland or Lloyd's Bank. I mean, the whole mania of the City of London, the paychecks to the bankers and these guys, you know, it spilled over, if you will, to the entertainment space and the media space. So here you have Jonathan Ross getting something like, I don't know, £6 million a year. So now there's a huge cutback, right, Stacey? And then, you know, the idea was he might get 3 million pounds a year. Now the idea is that he's, from what I understand, he's leaving. He's leaving the BBC. And, you know, he says, apparently, you know, there's a hint that, well, you know, I'm getting calls from talent agents in Los Angeles, California. Now,
yeah, we're talent agents are a dime a dozen. He doesn't say whether, like, what agency it's from as well. Like,
well, everybody's been to L.A. I mean, you go and get your dry cleaning and pick up your dry cleaning, and you've got three guys behind the counter, each trying to push their script on you, each claiming to be a producer, each claiming to have a deal in the works with a major studio, and each also claiming to be the brother-in-law of the hottest agent in Los Angeles. And this is repeated endlessly throughout the entire day. Los Angeles is night of the living talent agents. They just walk around like zombies. And basically, it's a feudal system where everybody is subservient to Steven Spielberg, who is the king, lord, master. Mm-hmm. And everyone is either 1, 2, 3, or 4 degrees removed from Spielberg, and that's it. So anyway, Gervais, who's a funny guy, who really is a talented guy, and he is making lots of money and very successful in the U.S. market. Now, Jonathan Ross, you know, he's at the point in his career where he needs to leave the nest. You know, the BBC has been the nest. You know, he's been nurtured. He's been coddled for years in a protected environment, a petting zoo, a celebrity petting zoo, where all his food is delivered to him, and he doesn't really have to work so hard, does he? Because it's part of that system that's underwritten by you, the freaking license payer. It's not a free market. It's a subsidized government market. It creates fantastic television. But it's not like you see in America now, Jay Leno and David Letterman and that new guy with the red hair, Conan O'Brien, are slugging it out network on network in multi-million dollar, billion dollar deals. Look, it's Darwinian survival of the funniest chat show host. And this is real capitalism meets comedy. It's comaism. And, or something. Capital funnyism. Funny animalism. It's an animalism. It's an aneurysm meets Jay Leno. And live on TV, details at 11. And therefore, this is what I'm getting at here is that, okay, once you throw, the Friday night talk show host on BBC, Jonathan Ross, into the snake pit of real commercial media television, I hope he does well. I really do. I hope he does well. I wish him all the best. My guess, and we make predictions on this show. My guess is that America has room for only one British late night chat show host, and that spot is currently being filled by Craig Ferguson. They're not going to have two, you know, British accent, weird, according to America, strange, exotic, bizarre, oh my God, he's from Europe, what an exotic treat, guys on late night TV, number one.
Craig Ferguson is Scottish, but...
That's Britain, isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't that British?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, but, I mean, I'm sick of this all Britain, UK, you know, distinction. England.
No, most Americans call it England. They don't...
Well, so do Britons. I mean, you listen to British people on TV and they go, yes, Great Britain did very well in
But
by the way, after the show, I'm returning to England. What do you mean you're returning to England? Are you from Great Britain or England? What are you talking about? Is there two places or is there one place?
There is an England.
Yeah.
Great Britain is made up of England, Scotland, and Wales.
Yeah, but the rules on which to use is completely arbitrary. And it's the same thing with the accents. It's complete snobism. And it's people throw out either UK or England, depending on what they believe they can get away with in terms of throwing their snobby little pricky faces into a conversation.
I got in trouble one time when I first ever arrived in the UK. And you know how when you go through customs or immigration and meeting any sort of people who could, you know, lock you up in some sort of prison forever, you get nervous. So I went up to the counter and the woman said, "Oh, what are you doing here?" And I said, I'm visiting, I'm on vacation, and I'm going to visit some family. And she said, "Oh, where do they live?" And I said, "Scotland." And she said, "Oh, your family's British?" And I said, "No, they're Scottish." And she said, "No, they're British." And I said, "No, they're Scottish." But I I didn't know there was a difference.
Well, look, it's completely arbitrary. And it depends on the passive aggressivity of people like who are in petty jobs of authority, like they're at the immigration checkpoints. This is a classic situation. They have no real power. They have very limited small amounts of power. So they use this arbitrary distinction between UK, Scotland, and England to terrorize people and to try to win, you know, the momentarily fleeting, confrontation. And because they live small, petty lives dominated by Marmite enemas. Now, let's get back to what I was talking about at the beginning of the show. And that is that we mentioned Jeremy Paxman, who's the top dog over there at Newsnight, BBC Newsnight.
That's right.
And the reason I bring it up is because the Independent newspaper, a very fine publication in the UK, put out a piece yesterday, January 15th, entitled "Russians Are Coming, But with News or Propaganda?" Question mark. That's right, the Russians are coming. Now, this is a story about how some dude named John Reilly, who's the head of Sky News, which is one of Murdoch's, media tentacles, he stood up in front of an audience at the Cambridge Union Society and asked to be set free. Quote, "I neither want nor need to be subjected to the controlling hand of the regulator, of a regulator armed with a set of codes and sanctions," he complained. According to Reilly, the requirement of the broadcasting watchdog Ofcom, which incidentally oversees Resonance 104.4 in this show, that British broadcasters produce news which is free of political bias is no longer necessary. If not for democratic reasons, then for pure economic ones. It is in the best interest of the commercial news broadcasters to be balanced, he argued. In simple terms, it's good business for us to be impartial. Okay, so he's saying that this Reilly is saying that impartiality makes good business sense. No, he's not understanding. In simple terms, it's good business. It's good business for us to be impartial.
He says we don't need the regulations that force us to be impartial because it's just good business sense anyway to be impartial.
He also says he wants to be set free.
Yeah, he wants to be set free of the regulations that force you to be impartial.
That's
right.
He's
saying, well, we don't need the regulations because we will be impartial because it makes good business sense. So we don't need you to monitor us and tell us, you know, how...
That's a lie. In America, they had a law for a while, which was called the Fairness Doctrine, which meant it's similar to what Ofcom tries to do. They tried to present both sides of all the stories. And then under Reagan, it was argued... And the liberals argued this as well, that the Fairness Doctrine was unfair because in the same kind of argument that, you know, it makes sense for us to give both sides of the story. It's in our economic interest to do so. So you don't need to regulate us. So they got using that argument, they got rid of the Fairness Doctrine under Reagan. And this opened the door to Murdoch and Fox and the current situation in America, which is that the Fox News and CNN and all the major media outlets are now a direct link, a direct spokespeople for the Pentagon and the government in the most propaganda-rich media environment in the world, bar none. Bar none, Stacey Herbert. There is only one massive propaganda machine in America that has a massive military attached to it, and massive lack of oversight in terms of where that money is spent in terms of invading countries, occupying countries, and murdering people. And that is U.S. Fox News, because they got rid of the Fairness Doctrine. So here you have this guy, John Reilly, who is so full of complete and utter horse feathers, arguing complete nonsense. To suggest that impartiality is in their best business interest is clearly ridiculous. You know, why do you think television features geeks and morons and nerds battling each other in the Jerry Springer Show? Is that because the business interest is to be impartial? What are you smoking now? Okay, so then Lord Mendelsohn, anytime you see his name, you know, things are going to get...
We need some music to whenever we mention his name.
Really, you need some music, special. Like from The Sound of Music.
The hills are alive with the lies of Peter.
Anyway, Lord Mendelssohn, back from his junket in Corfu with that dude in L.A., Geffen, he's convinced he knows what is happening here. Murdoch wants to fill British airwaves with more Fox-style news, end quote. All right, well, that's reasonably stated. He gets a gold star. Very good, Lord Mendelssohn. Very good. Very nice. Bravo. Bravissimo. And yet, in many British homes, the unashamedly pro-Republican Fox News is already available, along with the news channels of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Press TV, the Chinese state TV station CCTV 9, which, by the way, I sent them an email last week trying to get a show on there, and the television arm of the Russian state news agency RIA Novosta, or what's that, RT, or Russia Today. All these channels, including Fox News UK, are covered by Ofcom regulations on due impartiality, but many critics claim the rules are flouted. Quote, it's obvious to anyone with half a brain. This is Mendelssohn again. No, this is some other guy named David Mannion. Oh, I'm going to burp. I'm going to burp. Oh, I burped. It's obvious to anyone with half a brain that state-sponsored TV wants to peddle a particular line. Oh, I burped. Said David Mannion, editor-in-chief of ITV News. If channels are coming from a particular local perspective, I don't have a problem with that, unless they claim to be impartial when they're not. If channels pretend to adhere to historic impartiality rules and they're not, then I think they are in the dock for fraud. Strong words, very strong words from David Mannion, editor-in-chief of ITV News. And it's the big setup. Check out the setup, Stacey.
Okay, I'm checking it out, man.
At least there is diversity. Mm-hmm. Okay. Says the Independent. British news junkies channel hopping on Thursday evening might have come across different angles on the Haiti disaster from France 24, which Max Kaiser is the number one video of all time. Haiti, UN, or from Al Jazeera English. Oh, by the way, we've had some of the most viewed YouTubes on Al Jazeera English. We were there the first month they were on the air. We defined the very mission of Al Jazeera English.
This right here is the Max Kaiser propaganda channel.
I want to get into this whole nature of propaganda. Because, Stacey, because we do financial news on all these state television in English, I can tell you based on an apples-to-apples comparison which actually are propaganda and which are not. If you want to put Al Jazeera English, Press TV, Russia Today, BBC, Resonance 104.4, what other shows have I done? Networks and countries. You put them all together, and you talk about the exact same information in the exact same way. I can tell you right now, there is only one master propagandist in the world, and that's Jim Cramer at CNBC. By far, the worst of the worst. Anyway, it goes on to say that Al Jazeera... Let's see what else. We got one in Delhi. We got Japan. The Japanese public broadcaster, meanwhile, was airing this and that. Meanwhile, the far-right news channel, Glenn Beck, was discussing Barack Obama's policies with black Republicans in a slot titled, quote, The Effects of Big Government on the African-American Community, making little secret of his personal views. Beck went to the ad break with a sign-off, quote, Big Government. How it's hurting you and everybody next, end quote. Now, here's the big paragraph here. On Russia Today, it was the Brits who were under fire from shouty American financial journalist Max Kaiser. Quote, Gordon Brown is a very high-minded in his attempts to fight terrorism around the world. But when it comes to financial terrorism, he's doing nothing. Max told viewers of the Kaiser Report in an attack on bankers before accusing the BBC's most famous Rottweiler of being a government patsy. Quote, Jeremy Paxman put out the corporate line. He's got a huge soapbox with his newscast. Will people see through the propaganda of Jeremy Paxman? End quote, says Max Kaiser, quoted in the Independent newspaper, talking about the Kaiser Report on Russia Today. Now, Kevin Backhurst, controller of BBC News Channel. Now, this is where it gets, you know, absurd. Kevin Backhurst, controller of the BBC News Channel, takes the view that impartiality everywhere else helps to make the BBC's offerings stand out. Quote, it's a much more interesting landscape now for the audiences. France 24 and RT have got very obviously defined agendas. Choice is a really good thing, but whatever Sky ends up doing, the core of the BBC remains impartial TV news. That is our main selling point around the world, he says. Now, here's the main point, Stacey Herbert. The BBC is not impartial. Full stop. The BBC, I'll tell you right now, with my quantitative analysis, studying the financial news on all English-speaking networks in various countries around the world, I can tell you point blank, without compunction, that the BBC is highly partial. To wit, their recent interview with the president of Iceland. Jeremy Paxman took the position that A, the bankers in London were not responsible for financial terrorism. That is false. And B, that the president of Iceland had no right to insist on a democratic process in his own country. Why? To defend the banking terrorists in London, the Bank of England, and the banking establishment in London, and the British pound, who all of those things are his master. And the BBC and Jeremy Paxman reflects that particular point of view in a highly biased, impartial way. I'm sorry, partial way.
Yeah, but they also do that thing where, you know, that Jeremy Paxman report about Iceland, about, you know, which you were talking in this article that quotes you. They blamed the citizens of Iceland and for not backing the bill to pay the iSave depositors, but they don't provide any sort of context. They don't even talk about the banks and their roles and responsibilities and whether or not, you know, populations, you know, citizens, taxpayers should be responsible for the private debts of private bankers. You know, they don't question any of that, because I guess to them that would seem partial. They're putting the blame somewhere. So the same thing, you see that in their reporting with, say, you know, the bombing of civilians from 30,000 feet in the air by predator drones. They're not allowed to ask the question of, like, why we're doing this, and is this is this murder, or as, you know, Russia Today's ad campaign asks, you know, who is the bigger terrorist? Who's the one killing more innocent civilians, for example? Mm. They're not allowed to ask that because they don't want to draw the conclusion that would lay the blame to where it is. It might be.
Well, it's remarkable in that somebody believes that the BBC is impartial. And another example is during the breakdown of Lehman Brothers and Bear Stearns, every other press outlet in the world is reporting that Bear Stearns has reported that they are now bankrupt, except the BBC refused to report that news because they feared...
it was a Telegraph. Nobody in the UK could.
Yeah, okay. Well, that includes the BBC.
Yeah.
And they, even though that news was already reported on the wires as having come from the very company itself, they're so afraid of their own shadows that they don't even tell people what's really going on in the banking sector. And that's one of the reasons why people in the UK are so gobsmacked at how badly the situation happened, is because nobody in the UK press is reporting on what's going on, because they're so afraid of Ofcom in a way that even is beyond the remit of Ofcom. I don't think Ofcom, you know, we're governed by Ofcom, and yet we've been able to tell people over the past 5 years that there's a crisis, what's happening, what's going to happen, and you don't hear it on the BBC and these other UK outlets because they have overly interpreted Ofcom beyond the remit of Ofcom, because they're just, it's not about even the regulatory framework. It's about their own stinking careers. They're afraid of losing their stinking job if they insult a banker, because they know that all the money comes from the banking establishment, including Paxman.
But they are right to be worried, because look, they insulted Tony Blair, and he's the chief banker of all in this situation, and he had lots of people fired. Lots of people lost their cushy salaries, cushy jobs.
You know what's remarkable? Pensions. Remember that episode where the spin doctor for Blair, Alistair Campbell. Alistair Campbell. He walked onto the set of Jon Snow's Channel 4 News uninvited, and just started throwing furniture around and insulting Jon Snow.
Yeah, that was like speaking of Jerry Springer.
Yeah, I mean, now Jon Snow, in my opinion, within the regulatory framework of Ofcom, was perfectly within his purview to stand up, reach back, and sock that mother ass in the jaw. Can you say ass on the show? You can. I didn't say a really bad word, so I guess
donkey.
He could have just socked him in the jaw. And you could have seen Alistair Campbell on his back, spurting a fountain of blood on Channel 4 News, and Jon Snow could have looked in the camera and just said,
yeah,
and
but
that's
by the,
it.
By the way,
news.
He ended up being impartial in that situation because he allowed Alistair Campbell, this live news broadcast platform, to speak to the people of the UK about, and remember why he was there. He was on there to defend the dodgy dossier and to say that that it was not sexed up and all these people who say it is sexed up are wrong.
And we now know that's all false. He lied.
Exactly.
He
lied. But you gave this propagandist a platform to speak to people.
That's right. Channel 4 News gave a propagandist a platform which caused the deaths of many, many, many UK servicemen and a million, according to the Lancet report, civilians in Iraq.
I mean, but what should, you know, at least like when they... You know, they broadcast it. They should put warning signs across the bottom saying, you know, where the incentives of this person might lie. You know, if he's going to benefit financially or personally or politically from it.
Right. And what do we know now about Blair? He's involved in a huge energy transaction. He left number 10 Downing Street after going into Iraq for the energy companies. Now he goes to JP Morgan when he leaves number 10 Downing Street. And he engineers now a huge energy deal on behalf of the energy companies, Intercontinental Energy, multi-billion dollar deal. And he'll make another huge paycheck to pay for his flat in Connaught Square, which is, by the way, a neighborhood full of arms dealers in the U.S. Embassy. So there's a petting zoo right there, Connaught Square. It's a petting zoo for arms dealers and ex-PMs who are now working for JP Morgan, raising money for dodgy oil deals. Great little neighborhood over there. And of course, he's losing money on his flat because...
It's a house.
He's a putz. All right, let's look at this deal. Cerberus Capital. You remember when over there at Rolling Stone magazine, Matt Taibbi called Goldman Sachs blood-sucking squid vampires? Something like that.
Vampire squids, yeah.
Well, now, listen to this. This is a story from Mark Ames over there at Alternet of Cerberus Capital. Which is, in Cerberus Capital, you've got Jon Snow, who used to be the Treasury Secretary in America, the job currently taken by Tim Geithner, formerly by Hank Paulson. And you also have the number two guy, bigwig over at Cerberus Capital, is Dan Quayle, the vice president under Bush Part Two, who couldn't even spell potato. All right, Cerberus Capital, who took over Chrysler, and gutted it for billions in bonus money for themselves, and then got the government to pay him out. Okay, check this out. According to, Cerberus Capital. We'll get into the juicy bit here. One of the most notoriously ruthless LBO firms recently made $1.8 billion on its human plasma investment. A company called Talacris... It was purchased for $85 million 4 years ago, and Cerberus has made 23 times its investment on the human plasma that the company deals in. This was accomplished by the most savage, heartless means possible, by paying peanuts to impoverished human plasma donors who increasingly come from Mexico border towns to blood pumping stations set on the American side, jacking up the price of plasma by restricting supply. A lawsuit filed by the FTC accuses Cerberus Plasma Holdings of operating as an oligopoly, and then selling the refined products to the most desperately ill patients suffering from hemophilia, severe burns, multiple sclerosis, autoimmune deficiencies. The products cost so much, one IVIG, that's intravenous immunoglobulin, cost twice the price of gold.
Ooh.
As of last summer. That American health insurance companies have been dropping or denying their policyholders in increasing numbers and endangering untold numbers of people. So here you have, again, American they got this whole thing called the middlemen, the Minutemen. The Minutemen are guys on the Mexican-American border, and they're part of this thing called the Tea Party movement, and they're part of the neo-Nazi movement in America. There's a report recently, a very good film, about the neo-Nazi movement is now combining with what's called the Tea Party movement, and it's just this massive racist, really...
I think it was a Rick Rowley film.
Yeah, kind of a reactionary a movement in the U.S. that instead of people going after the bankers, they're decided to scapegoat the Mexicans, you know. So that's, you know.
Yeah, but this story just sounds like the neo-feudalism that we talk about in America all the time. There's no, you know, there's no normal sort of wealth creation. It's just toll booths. There's toll booths between you and life-saving drugs. There's toll booths between you and human plasma. You know, it's not so much that, you know, there's no great invention or ingenuity or innovation in human plasma, you know, it's other than what evolution and nature have provided. Yeah. But these guys control the market. So, you know, you can have it if you pay them a big fee.
Yeah, it's really an interesting story for lots of different reasons. You've got the whole border tension. You've got the Minutemen on the border who are trying to keep the Mexicans out. However, you've got Cerberus Capital, multi-billion-dollar company, trying to get the Mexicans in to get their blood. You've got the meatpacking industry in America who needs the undocumented cheap Mexican labor. They're trying to shuttle them in. While at the same time, you've got these so-called patriots on the border trying to keep them out. You've got mercenaries on the border who are making money by scalping Mexicans, paid by the same company who's financing Cerberus to shuttle people through the border to get their blood and to get their cheap labor to work in meatpacking industry. So you've got both sides picking on each other. You've got, it's gangs. It's just gangs. It's in America has become gang warfare. Cerberus is a gang just like the Crips and the Bloods.
Yeah, but they're also, you know, it's probably the same people behind both movements because the reason why they're able to control this and make 23 times their investment is because of this, you know, the situation on the border and the fact that people don't want them in. It leaves the Mexicans helpless who have to come over and sell their blood. And, it leaves, you know, a state of anarchy or lawlessness that suits these guys.
It is the same people behind it. And they are what I call a gulag casino complex of companies. You've got the mercenaries are making money. The cops are all, taking bribes and demanding more contracts, more equipment. So they all make money there. The prison operators, Correction Corps of America, and these prison operators are making money. Everybody is making money on the chaos. Now, you know, one of the reasons why people should be in favor of governments is because they can do a lot toward civilizing the country, the inhabitants. And you know, this is where I differ from the so-called libertarians out there who are constantly
how do you check them? Because look, Timothy Geithner was with a government and he said on the
let me finish
CNBC.
This for a second. I'm talking about the fact that in a government like in America in the 50s, they built the road system to go from the East Coast to the West Coast. Upon that road system was built a very vibrant an economy in the 1950s and 1960s, thanks to the government. The internet is a huge explosion of business, thanks to DARPA, which is created by the government. America's space program gave rise to people like Steve Jobs and Apple Computer and Microsoft Computer due to the space program and NASA, which was financed by the government. Yeah, America won World War II thanks to the government.
Yeah, but the 50s also saw Joe McCarthy, you know, so and lots of people's lives were ruined and terrorized.
Yeah, and Joe McCarthy was defeated by CBS News. That was still an independent news organization working outside of the corporate structure and the power of the fourth estate, the media, to topple that mini little dictator, Joe McCarthy.
I know, but people need to be able to organize in a way to... you know, best achieve certain things like you said, roads that need to be built, some things that are for the common good and to actually build society and communities and wealth and business.
Yeah.
But, you know, how do you stop a situation like Timothy Geithner, who is saying, oh, you know, he still maintains it was a good thing to pay out 100 cents on the dollar to AIG because he knows things that the taxpayer doesn't.
Well,
Tony
saying,
Blair used the same thing with the invasion of Iraq. He said, you know, believe me, trust me, if you knew what I know, I'm doing what's best for you. And I have a hard time sleeping at night because I'm just doing what's best for you. The same thing with this Cass Sunstein article this week, where it turns out that Cass Sunstein, who is Obama's information czar or computer technology czar, whatever, he's apparently wrote an article just a few months ago for Harvard Law Review or Law School or something about the fact that we should have some, you know, we should, the government should plant basically provocateurs onto websites that promote conspiracy theories.
Okay, what I'm saying is that the Mexican-U.S. border, there's no government in sight. There's no Mexican government. There's no U.S. government. It's a bunch of corporate gangs fighting each other and making tons of money in gang warfare. And if there was a government, this would be a great place for the government to be proactive in establishing a border based on some ideology, some belief, some laws about what that border represents. Now, I agree with you that you don't have it today because you don't have a government in the United States. You've got corporations that have destroyed the government, starting under the neoliberal revolution with Reagan and Milton Friedman, and the government has now been completely eliminated in America. So I'm for a government doing the things that government is good at doing, and I think people should keep in mind that, you know, the way to stop gang warfare on borders is to have an effective government. Now, the U.S. does not have an effective government. The government was bought and paid for by corporations and gangs, as we see here now. But, you know, this is something that if there was a working government, you would see this all go away quickly. But we don't have a working government.
Yeah, I think the government should have impartiality laws. Ofcom should regulate them. Go regulate them. You know, so when Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton were debating, they each should have had to say ahead of time, like, hi, I'm Barack Obama, and I want to be, you know, the Democratic nominee for the president. And first, I must state that I am being financed by Goldman Sachs as my number one contributor, and my number two contributor is Google or whatever, you know, and take this into consideration when listening to what I tell you.
Well, clearly the media is a gatekeeper for that kind of thing. And the media, within their remit, should have those disclosures before allowing the debate to go on the public airwaves. And the media, unfortunately, has been co-opted by the same corporate forces. So you don't get the media function. There's no media either in the U.S. There's no functioning media. There's no functioning government. So you have a corporocracy and you have gang warfare. But it would be great if the media were functioning. They would give those types of disclosures and say, here's Barack Obama. He's 50% of his donations come from this bank and 40% come from this oil company. And his background includes this stint at this think tank run by these corporations. Here's...
But they themselves should have to state it. And I know, I mean, this is important for the UK because they're about to introduce their first presidential style debate like this.
Yeah.
So any of these promises that politicians make, they should have to tell you first, before they even start offering promises, they must tell you who is financing them.
That's right, they should. And if they don't, it's up to the media, the fourth pillar, the fourth estate, to supply the checks and balances. The thing that makes the American government so interesting when it was working is that it had a function, had checks and balances so that no one could amass imperial power. You had the judicial, you had the legislative, and you had the executive. And these branches were all checks and balances on each other. And it worked, you know, reasonably well for 150, 160 years before basically all the special interest groups financed by, you know, stealing money on Wall Street for the most part.
Yeah, but I think it should be personal accountability. I think it should be David Cameron telling the people who exactly finances him. You don't need to rely on Fox News to say only focus on one side or Rachel Maddow to focus on another side. And they put their own spin or their natural opinion about what's bad or what's good. and you have to rely on people tuning in to that news or reading that newspaper to find out who's actually financing these guys. And then somebody reads the New York Times and they say, oh, well, this is just a liberal paper writing this about who's financing.
Yeah, but, okay, everyone has an individual interest within the framework of a constitution. A government presents their constitution. America has its constitution. You can do anything you want within the constitution. Same thing in France and Germany and the UK. I don't know if they have a constitution. No, they don't. They have some kind of a scroll left over from...
They just have, I guess, common law or something like that.
They have common law. They don't have a constitution. But in the U.S., they do have a constitution. So you can do whatever you want within that constitution. And if needs are not being met within the constitution, there are systems of checks and balances, including the media, which operates as a watchdog on that those types of excesses. So... again,
yeah, but I'm asking you then, okay, so Goldman Sachs was the number one financier of Obama. Goldman Sachs also takes ads out on most of the media and finance most of the media. So they have to say, we're going to report on Obama. But first we must tell you that we're mostly financed by Goldman Sachs too, but so is he.
Okay, but let's exactly. Now Goldman Sachs operates outside of the law and they also operate outside of the Constitution. So that's the problem, as I've been saying for years now, is here's a major bank, billion-dollar bank, who's operating outside of the law and outside of the Constitution. Now, that's the job number one is dealing with that problem. And if you got rid of the lawbreaker and the tyrant who's operating outside of the Constitution, then you would be taking steps, important steps, toward restoring checks and balances, credibility, and yep. Some kind of representational government.
Yeah, and now you have this notion introduced, or certainly used quite extensively under Bush, of retroactive laws. So, like, who cares if they're breaking the law? Somebody powerful like Goldman Sachs or J.P. Morgan or the telecoms industries. Remember, they were retroactively given immunity retroactively for breaking the very fundamental elements of the Constitution.
That's right. Remember Oliver North, his defense was plausible deniability.
Yeah, but the telecoms, for example, were planting illegal listening devices onto the wire systems of, you know, American telephone callers, you know, the citizens and people talking on the phone. They diverted the calls right through to the NSA.
They broke the law.
This is against the law. There's no plausible deniability. They had to know. They had to know because they put in a separate infrastructure for it. But they were given retroactive immunity.
They broke the law.
So, yeah.
But instead of adhering to the law, then the corporations got governments to write new laws.
Yeah, but there's also in the Constitution the fact that the president can give pardons. So, you know, if all of the presidents are insiders for the corporations, there's no way you could ever get justice anymore. Ever.
Right. Well, then beyond the Constitution and beyond the legal framework, you then also have a commonly understood ideology. For example, every child in America at the beginning of their school day recites the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. In this daily chorus, they state the ideology and the philosophy behind the Constitution and the laws of the Republic. Now, if in fact you have rampant lawbreaking and you have rampant unconstitutional behavior in every aspect of government, in every aspect of the corporate platform, then you need to also understand that, ideologically speaking, your country no longer represents anything of merit.
Yeah, but you bring up the Pledge.
Which is why I don't live there. This is why I don't live there.
Yeah, but you bring up the Pledge of Allegiance that every American has to say in school, most Americans, for religious reasons, some people are allowed to not say it. But, you know, you have to say, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands. And it doesn't say into the democracy, the 51% miracle voting machines for which it stands, or anything like that.
That's
it says
right.
To the Republic, which is a republic of laws. It's supposed
right.
to be about law, not democracy.
Okay, so in the final minutes we have remaining in this show, let's just summarize a little bit. So you have the propaganda accusation coming from the UK press against Russia Today, and they hold the BBC up as a model of impartiality. I can tell you right now that that's nonsense. Based on the financial reporting we do in all these countries and in the common language of English, I can make an apples-to-apples comparison and tell you that the biggest propaganda mechanism in the world is Jim Cramer and CNBC, followed closely by Fox, and somewhere in the middle are organizations like the BBC and other UK outlets. We also have talked about the fact that in America, you've got the coup d'etat that took place, that you've got rogue capitalists on Wall Street operating outside of the law, outside of the Constitution, and outside of the ideology of the country. And as Ron Paul says, the reason why you've got acts of terrorism is because America is conducting acts of occupation. That's the cause and effect. So finally, you know, let me make the point that, and as I've been, I don't live in the United States because when it became clear that George Bush was going to win in 2000, I moved because I had already experienced George Bush the first, and I decided I'd rather not live in the Bush-ruled country. I contemplated going back when Obama looked like he was going to win, but clearly now that he's proven himself to be nothing more than the same corporate nonsense, there's no point in returning. I prefer to live in a much more a country that respects human rights and their own constitution, which is a country of France. And, you know, finally, this is why when these so-called tragedies happen in America, these so-called terrorist acts, you know, when Americans just shrug their shoulders and ask themselves, why is this happening to us? I'm sorry, but I have to laugh in your face. You bring this on yourself. You don't respect your constitution. You don't respect the rule of law. You don't respect the ideology and the spirit of the country in any way, shape, or form. So the party's just beginning, y'all. And things are getting a lot hotter and a lot more dysfunctional before they get better. And I'm going to buy my condo in Florida that was trading for $800,000 3 years ago. I'm going to be buying it for $60,000 in the year 2015. And that's when I'm retiring. And what else, Stacey Herbert?
Well, that's about it for this week.
All right. Well, we'll be back next week. This is The Truth About Markets. Tune in to Truth About Markets New Zealand, which you can find on maxkaiser.com. Truth About Comments, which is also found at maxkaiser.com. The Kaiser Report, which you can find on Russia Today, which is also on maxkaiser.com. Or On the Edge with Max Kaiser, which is on Press TV, which is also linked to on maxkaiser.com. And I think that covers all of our shows at the moment. If you have any questions, send us an email at, what's the email address we're using for this show?
max@maxkaiser.com.
Yeah, use max@maxkaiser.com. If you have any emails or questions or suggestions, I generally read some of them. And if you have any other questions, you can send them to stacy@maxkaiser.com. Until next time, this is Max Kaiser and Stacy Herbert saying to all, bye, y'all.